Welcome to Chat NDT with AS&T, a podcast from the American Society for Non-Destructive Testing. I'm Debbie Siegler, the host of the podcast. In this episode, I spoke with Anish Pudel and Philip Chu about their research projects on digital imaging correlation. Philip currently serves on AS&T's Board of Directors, and Anish is the chair of AS&T's Research Council. Anish and Dr. Chu, welcome to Chat NDT with AS&T. I'm so glad you joined me for this conversation.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
And likewise, it's a privilege to be here. Thank you so much for inviting us.
So I was reading the November 2022 materials evaluation and came across your technical paper titled Assessment of Composite Aluminum Adhesive Joints Using Digital Image Correlation. And I thought it would make a good conversation topic for the podcast. I'm going to ask Philip for my first question, which is, what is digital image correlation?
Okay, I'll try to explain that. So basically, the digital image correlation is a method developed for measuring the strain of the body. And it's a very important technique in determining the changes of the body that is under loading conditions. So that's going to lead to the finding of the stress in the body. So if there's some place there's a stress concentration, that's going to lead to a failure of the object. And also we can use that as the indication of the defect. Okay. So the way it works is that you use the optical method. So you take pictures of the object before it's being loaded, and then you take another picture of the object after being loaded. And then to do that, you need to have some certain patterns on the surfaces. So the pattern we use usually is just a random pattern, but it can be other patterns. So random pattern meaning it gets pocket dot, so kind of the speckles or dots on the surfaces. And then we try to correlate these two set images before and after deformation. So you can zoom in into the one section of the reference images before deformation, and then try to move that to the images for the object after being loaded or deformed. And then you correlate these two set images, and you can find out the displacement of that subset. And then you can track all the subset throughout the images, and therefore you can determine the displacement of every single point on the object. So after that, you need to go through the calculations by using the derivation of the displacement field, you can get a strength. So once you get a strength, you can figure out the stress. So say, for example, there's one area, there's some crack over there, and then once loaded, the crack is going to create higher stress over there. So you have a stress concentration, and that's going to create the higher strain values over there. So using image correlation, you can identify that the particular spot. So you can use that as the ND technique.
You mentioned strain. So could you explain to our listeners what strain is and why you would measure it?
Yeah. So the strain is basically the change of the size or shape of the object that's been deformed, loaded. So you can look at rubber band, you stretch rubber band, if it's originally 1 inch, you stretch it, it becomes 1.2 inches. So that's 20% elongation. So 20% is the strain. And upon the strain, for different materials and different properties, you can calculate the stress. As I mentioned earlier, you know, the stress can be used to figure out if there's any area on the structure or the parts you're using that can create higher stress values and therefore higher strain values. That's indication of the failure of the object, or you know, can figure out that's the critical point of the object. And again, you can use that for determine if there's cracks or discontinuities somewhere on the surface or subsurface.
And I would also like to add one thing here is, depending on different kind of loading mode, there can be different types of strain. If it's a tensile force, you know, you're going to get a tensile strain. If it's a compressive force, then you can calculate the compressive strain, strain, volumetric strain. But also, it is important to note that the strain is typically measured as a dimensionless quantity because they are usually expressed as the ratio of the change in the length or shape of a material to its original length and shape.
And the traditional way of measuring the strain is by placing something called a strain gauge on the surface. Strain gauge is made of metal wires, and then the change of the length of the strain gauge is going to create some kind of change of resistance of the electric circuit. So you can use that to measure the strain, and that can do it very accurately. However, where you want to measure strain from, you can put strain gauges in certain locations. So it's just kind of like point measurement. The digital image correlation method is whole field measurement. You can just measure strain for the whole area, okay, and you can just zoom in to find the values any place you want to. So it's kind of like the ultrasonic testing. You use one transducer, you measure the one point over there. But if you use a C-scan, then you can create the whole map over there. Then you can get the whole field map of the defect map.
Can you provide our listeners with a brief history of digital image correlation? And also, how did you get started in this type of work?
Yeah, I started probably 40 years ago when I was studying for my PhD in University of South Carolina. So my advisor, Dr. Leo Renson, he came with the idea of matching the speckle patterns to find the strains. So the idea is originally from the old methods measuring the strain is by using laser. If you shine a laser on a surface with diverged beam, then you can find the speckle patterns over there. I think, you know, all of you have been doing that before. If you shine a laser light on a certain spot, and it's not going to be a very sharp point. It's going to be granularly kind of a point over there. That's the speckle patterns. So the change of speckle patterns is corresponding to the movement of the surface. So people have been using that to find the displacement field. But the way they do it, it's very tedious. You have to use a film to record the speckle pattern images before deformation. And then you use the same film. This is usually a glass plate, not just a single film, a glass plate. And so you have double exposed images before and after deformation. So next, you need to shine another focused laser light through the glass plate. It's kind of like, you know, have a slit. You shine a light through a slit, then you could create the fringe patterns behind that. So the orientation and the spacing of the fringe patterns will give you the values of the displacement. So you have to go through that from God knows how many points to 100 points, 1,000 points, and that takes hours to do that and to get those displacement. And then you can get a strain. So if you thought about it, well, at that time, the computer imaging and then computer technologies become a little bit better. So he thought about maybe we can just use computers, image processing to compare those images. So that's how he gets started. So I was his first graduate student to work on these techniques. And so the original idea is to use a laser light using the video cameras. At that time, video cameras, it's probably 100 times worse than what we have right now on a cell phone. And analog camera can generate 256 lines, and that's about it. Take 2 minutes to record one image. So we use that one to record images. You can see the laser speckles are very tiny, very small, and then it's any changes in the environment, like vibration, even a single breath, can change the speckle patterns. So very difficult to record images, let alone to match those patterns. So eventually, I spent probably 1 year to develop the computer code, which can compare images and get a strain out of it. But there's no way to do the experiment properly. And my wife was studying the studio art in this same university. So I guess that the story is that she gave me this suggestion. Why don't you just paint the speckle patterns on the surface object and use that to simulate the laser speck patterns? So I did that. And then it worked perfectly. And then later on, I talked to my advisor and said, well, why do we need to use laser for? Just stick with the pattern speckles. So the rest is history. So now nobody uses laser speckles anymore and just use the pattern speckles on the surfaces. The advantage is that the pattern speckle could be smaller, tiny speckles on the small object with small deformation, or like NASA did with the rocket they used. They test the rocket by compress the whole section of it. They put speckle patterns all the way around. It's not tiny speckles. It's pretty big speckles. But probably 20, 22 high-speed cameras around it, and then they record the changes. And then they compare the side by the two pair of cameras at a time, and then determine the displacement in that way.
What industry or industries does this research apply to? How do you see it moving from your labs to being used out in industry?
Oh, this DIC, you know, as the author in one article in that particular ME issue mentioned, that's kind of revolution since the strain gauge was invented. So not only you can measure the strain in one spot, might be a strain gauge, now you can measure the whole field strains. And it can be very tiny, but it can be very big. Okay, like smaller ones, people can use these microscope images. For microscope images, you can generate some tiny speckles on the specimen, and then can determine the changes. You can apply that to the living tissues. So people can apply that to the tissues before for biomedical engineering research, can determine the changes of the muscles or tendon and so forth, and can be used dynamically for applying to the vibration of the wing of airplane. Use high-speed cameras. So high-speed cameras, you can record the videos, and then you can perform the digital image correlation to determine the displacement. Okay, so that's become very versatile methods. Additionally, you can use that in extreme environment, for example, high temperature environment. Okay, and people have been doing that by creating special kind of speckle patterns on the object, and then the object or the parts put in the oven for a few thousand degrees, and they still can track the changes and determine the strength in the materials.
You mentioned that you started working on digital image correlation 40 years ago, so you must have seen a lot of advancements over your four decades. Can you talk a little bit about the evolution that you've seen?
Yeah. It's changed a lot. A lot of people have been doing research and contribute to this field of development. So when I first started, it just, you know, one camera in zoning in the one area, because the computer technology is not that advanced, it's very slow. So we managed to get a strain just one area at a time. And later on, the computer become faster and we have better algorithms, and we were able to get strain measurement in larger areas. Additionally, I come up with the idea of interpolating the images so that the accuracy and precision is not just limited by the size of the pixels in the image plane of the camera. So we can get the precision accuracy down to 100s of pixels like that. For example, you know, one of the experiments we did before at NASA is that with just regular cameras with 300 millimeter lens at a distance about probably 1 meter, and then we can zoom in to an object and then be able to get the precision for down to probably 5 micrometers. So it's a very, very good technique with the interpolation. And then later on, I tried to use two cameras so that I can get the outer plane displacement, because one camera, you can get in-plane displacement, right? Up and down, left and right, that's it. But with the two cameras, you can register the changes out of plane. The plane may move, the object may move toward you or away from you. So now you can get 3D shape of the object, okay? So I did that. And then another researcher in South Carolina also did that with two cameras, zoom into one area. So that's the beginning of a 3D DIC. And then 10 or 15 years later, people think about, well, we can use the 3D volume, this is called the volumetric DIC, using X-ray CT scan images. So that's how you can see the whole volume. Instead of treating the 2D images, you can see the 3D volume. That becomes 3D volumetric DIC. So you can, now you can find the displacement in all three directions inside the object, not only on the surfaces. So that's the advancement in the area. And then, of course, you know, people have been doing other things like using, like I use X-ray images, use the infrared images or use the ultrasonic test images for all kinds of TISC methods, you know, to find a defect or to find the deformation object.
I have a question for you and Anish. How did you begin working together?
When I was a graduate student at Southern Illinois University, that's where I came to know Dr. Chu. And he was also my academic advisor at SIU. So we've known each other for now, I would say, a fairly long time, since 2008, 2009.
I want to talk about the paper that's in ME. When did you start working on it? And can you talk a little bit about what the paper is about?
Sure. When I was doing my PhD under Dr. Chu's supervision, there are a lot of different things I was doing. And when we came to realize there was a need in the aerospace industry to determine the strength of the bond, like adhesive bond that are commonly used in the aerospace application, to be able to non-destructively quantify its strength, as well as being able to find out if we can come up with a reliable way of finding a defect inside the bond, that was a big need there. And that's how this project got started. And I can say that since we hear already Dr. Chu talk about digital image correlation, and we kind of know a little bit about more about DIC, I can say that this paper specifically talks about using digital image correlation methods to measure and map the full field displacement and strain fields at the bonding interface of a dissimilar joints that are commonly used in the aerospace application. And through this work, we were able to show or demonstrate it would be possible to determine the strength of the bond at the interface using this approach by applying calculations or by through different calculations that use various theoretical and mathematical models that exist in the solid mechanics as well as in the experimental mechanics.
What interests you about this topic, or you and your team actually, to conduct the work?
The lab that I work for Dr. Chu is called the Intelligent Measurement and Evaluation Lab, and we call it IMEL. It has a pretty rich history of working with, back then we had a CAFS, which was a Center for Advanced Friction Studies, where we work with a lot of industries, partners, specifically looking into the friction materials. That lab, Dr. Chu, has also done a lot of work in the past with defense and as well as with NASA and Boeing. So back then, when we were working with Boeing on a different projects, and the need for being able to quantitatively characterize the bond shear strength came. And I think that was the start of this work, mainly because the carbon fiber reinforced composites are widely used today in many, many aerospace, military, and commercial aircraft applications. Some of the notable examples of some big structure that use composites include like U.S. Navy V-22 Osprey, F-35 Joint Strike Fighter, as well as on the commercial side, Boeing 787, Boeing 777X, Airbus 350, they are mostly made with the composites. So now you have these big structures, and a lot of time it's not possible to, you know, build this big structure at one piece. So that often require parts to be joined somehow. So joining two materials, whether it's joining composite with composites or composite with metal alloys, using adhesives in these structural applications, it does offer several advantages over the traditionally mechanically fastened joints using bolts, fasteners, and riveted joints. And there are many, many advantages of why adhesive bond offer superior compared to the traditionally mechanical fastened joints. Some of them include potential weight and cost saving, higher to strength weight ratio, better fatigue and corrosion resistance. And most importantly, I think the bonds allows for a uniform load transfer in the part by eliminating the stress risers that are associated typically with the mechanical fasteners in the loaded holes. So although the superior properties make this adhesive bonding an ideal candidate for many applications, one of the significant limitations of using the adhesive bonding technique solely in this structural application is, I would say, the formation of a weak bond. They also call it a kissing bond in the bonding interface. These bonds basically displays intimate mechanical contact, but has a little to no molecular bonding and have low adhesive strength. A lot of ND methods have been explored to quantify the strength of this bond, but they all come with a limited success. So there is often a greater need for detecting these weak or the kissing bond because to assure for the structural integrity, because what happens is like if you don't find this weak or kissing bond, this interfacial bond defect could open up during the peak stresses and can also propagate to the critical size before localized disbonding can produce a detectable void or even in a worst case failure. So being able to come up with the novel solution that would detect these defects, at the same time being able to determine the bond strength in a non-contact or non-destructive way would be beneficial for all the asset owners. And I think that was the main driving force or the motivation for us to conduct this work.
What were some of the most important findings of the work? And did you also receive feedback from industry?
So our potential customer here was Boeing. So they were able to have a great value of the work that we did. And matter of fact, we even have a patent with Boeing because they were highly intrigued with the work that we did. And we can talk about it later on. But specifically talking about some of the important findings based on this work, I would say that we were able to detect changes in when we looked into the whole field displacement or the strain contour map using a DIC principle. We were able to detect these minute changes in these specimens, especially on the simulated defective specimen, at a very, very relatively low load levels. Now, these load levels correspond to, I would say, about 15% of the failure load for one of the contaminated sample, whereas there, that also correspond to about 30% of the failure load to another type of contaminated sample. And overall, what we also found was the bond that exhibit the kissing or weak bond, they were highly characterized by the negative strain when we look into the strain map. And we believe it is basically attributed to the localized disbonding when you apply the loading. This weak bond starts to separate locally, and we're able to see those things in almost near real time when we apply this method. And in addition to that, we also were able to see there was extremely high compressive strain along the overlap edges where the last year sample was when we tested them. And again, I think this was due to the higher peeling stresses of these two adherents and the stress concentration that was building up around the edges of the adhesively bonded joints. So long story short, yes, we were able to detect changes as a result of this weaker kissing bond at a relatively lower load level. So that means you would not wait for the part to fail before you experience a failure. You can detect it at a fairly low load levels. That way, that would allow the asset owner to take the proactive actions right away.
So can you circle back to the feedback that you received from Boeing, and plus you talked about a patent?
So as I mentioned, Boeing company, they were very interested in this work. They were encouraged with the findings that we got out of this work. And as a result, we went ahead and filed a patent together. So definitely, I hope there is a good horizon for it in the future. And when it comes down to how we can expand on this work, I know that after I completed my PhD and I moved on, Dr. Chu and his group expanded on our original idea of using this approach with the ultrasound images.
Yeah, that's true.
The idea here now is instead of painting the surface with the paint, you can create a speckle pattern inside the material if you embed with some particles, especially in the barn line, that are sensitive to the ultrasound as a result of the acoustic impedance mismatch. And that would theoretically create an ultrasonic speckle pattern when we do the ultrasonic imaging. So the idea here is now we can collect the images, the ultrasonic images, before and after the loading. And obviously we can use global markers to keep track of where we are taking the pictures. That way we can align them later on. And later on we can compare different set of ultrasonic images before and after loading. And we should be able to monitor the local or the global strain field along the structure. Now, this is key because now this would now allow not only to find out where the problem area exists, but at the same time, once you calculate your strain, you can circle back and apply your mechanics principle, a lot of equations, and then you should be able to calculate the stress and determine the stress that a structure is undergoing. So I think this would provide a valuable tool for everyone who wants to use this concept. Dr. Chu, do you have anything else to add on this one?
Yeah, so basically, you know, when you asked me about the development of the DIC, right, start from one camera on the surface, deformation on the surface, implant deformation, two cameras for autoclavian deformation, and then volumetric DICs using X-ray CT scans for the 3D object deformation. But this one here is kind of special. The pattern we filed with the Boeing company, it's much simpler than using CT scan. You just have to embed some of the speckle patterns, as Anish described, in the bone line. That's especially good for study of bone line. And you can use ultrasound. That's why we use the ultrasound. The ultrasound CT scan, scan images, and before and after formation. And then if any bone or something happened inside, it will show up as a defect map. And in addition to measuring the strain inside. And then you can also use X-ray itself, you know, simple X-ray setup. Doesn't need X-ray CT scan, just X-ray, and you'll be able to do the same thing over here. As a matter of fact, we already published a paper with one of the students who graduated Mirzayet Forward Karimian, and the paper was published in the Research in Non-Destructive Evaluation in 2020.
So will you be working together again in the future, or what's next?
Yeah, for DIC, you know, it all depends, right? Depends on what the opportunities are. And over here in the academia, we need to support the students, the research, and then so it's sometimes depends on funding situations. If there's funding for DIC, then we do that. And currently, most of the work that we focus on is in the, like, ND 4.0, it's in the artificial intelligence and the machine learning part of the DIC, how to find the defect within the object using the artificial intelligence and then machine learning. So for DIC, and one DIC application right now is probably some people are using that for 3D printing, you know, to try to monitor the 3D printing processes to see if you can track the defect. And then Tanish can tell you what we've been collaborating with right now.
So, yeah. So after I left SIU, I took a little bit turn on my career, because when I was at SIU, I basically worked mostly on the composites and more research that was geared towards aerospace and aircraft application. But then, you know, I moved into railway, and now with Dr. Chu and I, and with our company, Dr. Chu is doing pretty interesting work on, I would say, a very difficult problem that's been existed in the railroad for a long, long time. And he's been looking into the line scanning thermography approach on inspecting the foot of the rail. Currently, there are no existing techniques that are commercially available and that would be able to inspect the foot of the rail. And Dr. Chu and his team are currently exploring the line scanning thermography approaches for inspecting the rail foot or the rail base. So yeah, we are continuing our endeavor on a different subject, but we do collaborate quite a bit on different topics.
Yeah, I'll be more than happy to use DIC for railroad defect detection. Unfortunately, you know, it doesn't work that way. So, but otherwise, you know, I'll be more than happy to use that method.
Can this approach be expanded to other applications?
Yes, definitely. This approach can be expanded to a lot of different applications. The idea of using NDE or NDT imaging, not only ultrasound, but a lot of other imaging that includes x-rays or any other modalities that can produce an image for components in the structure, we can use that for a part, component, or structure that can have an embedded speckle pattern. And we can take these images and we can use the DIC algorithm to be able to find the strength field or to measure the strength field. And as a result, you can calculate the corresponding stress fields. So yeah, I would say it's limitless, but you have to start somewhere.
Yeah, so basically those two projects, one initially mentioned for the bone line inspection, bone line measurement using embedded speckles. That's one of the projects I would like to continue if I can get anybody to collaborate with me or want to sponsor the research. Another one I want to circle back is the use of laser speckles. So now the camera is much better, and using laser speckles has its own benefit. We don't have to pan the surface. Not all surfaces can be panned. You know, if you pan the surface, some object is going to change the property. People may not like that to use that. Using laser speckles, they just shine a laser on the surfaces and do the measurement, and then that's it. And I've been doing some research in the past few years, have pretty good success rate in the using laser speckles. And so I want to continue with that one, especially if you use the spirography, combined with spirography. Spirography using laser speckle anyway. So combined with that one, and in addition to determine the defect using spirography, you also find the strain and stresses and so forth. So that's the two directions I want to go. To continue working on with the DIC, if I can get somebody to collaborate with me.
Well, if there are any listeners out there that would like to collaborate with Philip, please get in touch with me and I will put you in touch with Phil. Anish, I know that I just want to recognize that you won the Best Dissertation Award for this work and that you were the only student at Southern Illinois University to win both Outstanding Master's Thesis and Outstanding Dissertation Award. So congratulations. And I know that you worked a lot to get external grants to fund your research, right?
That's correct, yes. And I want to thank Dr. Chu. It was a privilege working with him, as well as I'm working with him right now, too. It's always a privilege working with him. And I'm honored as well to have him as my academic advisor at SIU. Thank you, Dr. Chu, for allowing me an opportunity to lead and all at the same time helping me towards my professional growth. Today, we not only work on a professional level, but we also work together in AS&T. Both of us serve in the AS&T Board of Directors. We work together on several AS&T committees. I would say we are a good colleague now. Thank you. Thank you for all the support that you have provided me over the year.
Oh, you're welcome. I just want to say that I think everybody knows that Anish is my star student. And to all my current students, I always tell them there's a role model out there, you know, Anish Podell. Just learn from him. And not only in research, but also how to engage in the AS&T and contribute your effort to AS&T and the NDT field. So I'm glad to have Anish to be my graduate student, not only for just for a few years, but for 6 years with me, that helped our group to grow and can accomplish a lot of a very difficult research projects.
Anish, it sounds like you set the bar really high.
That's
for those other students. Philip, did you get Anish involved in AS&T, or Anish, did you come to AS&T separately?
Yeah, so, you know, in AS&T, there's very good program in Research Council. It's mentoring programs. I think Dr. Sean Kandarian started with that one. So once I start taking students to the AS&T conferences, I got them involved with the mentoring programs and then encourage them to attend the company meetings and volunteer work, you know. So I think Anish volunteered a lot of different work, and he's a very strong ability to take on all kinds of obligations. And eventually, he was given the opportunity to be in charge of the research symposium, and then he made a lot of changes and then set up the nice trend. So now the research symposium is keep on growing and become much better, and then eventually it's going to become probably the best NDE research conference in the whole world. That's the plan. And also, you know, Anish got involved even more than I do. He's now is the chair of the research council, and then hopefully he will continue to serve, and then we'd like to have him to come back to the board of directors, and then eventually, if he wants, we'd like to help him to become the president or chairman.
No pressure.
I appreciate it for your kind words. Thank you, Dr. Chu.
Well, Philip has your future mapped out.
Well, he always set up the pretty high bar for me, too. I remember back in the day when I was in his lab, every time I asked him, when do you want this thing to be done? And he's like, yesterday. So that was the kind of training that I got from him.
So you're used to getting things done yesterday.
Yep.
I try my best.
Is there anything that we haven't covered about your paper or that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Obviously, if you want to get to the technical details, I strongly suggest our readers to go and download the November 2022 issue of the materials evaluation. We have our paper there. And obviously, if you have any questions, feel free to reach us out. We're always there to help and disseminate our findings and knowledge so that, you know, you don't have to go through the same pain again, whatever we've gone through, so that you can have a head start on the forefront of the research.
Eventually, I would like to try to see if we can use DIC for NDT purposes a lot. So right now, DIC, the major users are the sphere mechanics. They use that to measure the strength, to determine the stresses. But to use that for NDT, for defect detections, it's not very common. Definitely can be done, you know. So that's what I'm hoping for. And additionally, for NDT, you can use that for the structural health monitoring purposes. So like NDE is just to find a defect at one shot over here. But health monitoring is put sensors on the object to monitor the changes over time. So maybe you can use that to predict the fatigue and so forth. So it's a combined DIC with NDT and health monitoring. It could be a good trend to investigate.
Thank you both for joining me on Chat NDT with AS&T. As you both mentioned, the article can be found online at asnt.org in the November 2022 issue of Materials Evaluation. Thank you so much, and I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you, Davey.
Sure.
Thank you, Dr. Chu.
Thank you for listening to Chat NDT with AS&T. For more information about our organization, please visit our website at asnt.org. You can also connect with us on social media at AS&T Info on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and YouTube. Chat NDT with AS&T is copyrighted by the American Society for Non-Destructive Testing. AS&T, creating a safer world.